lights are bright, but I know there are people out there. Are there people upstairs? Can you hear me upstairs? Sound like Carter's whistle stop. Thank you. Well, I'm very pleased to be here, and I first want to extend my appreciation and thanks to Governor Rhodes, to Bob Taft, and your great chairman, Kent McHugh, my dear friend Ray Bliss, and a longtime friend of mine, though I was never privileged to serve in the Senate with him, Senator Bricker and Mrs. Bricker. Of course, I want to say a special word for my good friend Sam Devine, who served in the Congress with me and gave me a lot of good help and a lot of good support in those early days when I didn't know one chamber from the other. In fact, I voted in the Senate the first day. It didn't change a thing. When I went from the House to the Senate, someone said it had improved the intelligence level of both bodies. And I don't know. I didn't believe that for a while, but after a while, I believed it. And for the first 6 months, you wonder how you got to the Senate. The rest of the time, you wonder how the others got to the Senate. And of course, I know this is a statewide meeting, but we are in the area represented so ably by Sam Devine and Chalmers Wiley that I want to say a special thanks to their supporters and their workers and their precinct leaders who may be here. I listened very carefully to Bob Taft as he read the introduction I handed to him on the plane. Very good. I thought he could have been a little stronger in a place or two, but it wasn't bad. I said earlier that I've been in Ohio so often I was accused at one time of representing the state. In a very nice way, of course. But I've always been fascinated by the state of Ohio and Ohio politics, and I say that very sincerely. I've always been fascinated by the party efforts of Republicans in the state of Ohio and by the fact that though it's an industrial state, that we've always had a majority in the Congress. You've had great leadership in the governor's office, and you have it back again now in Governor Rhodes. You have one of the greatest senators of all time in Bob Taft, and he's coming back again with your help next year. I remember when Ray Bliss was the chairman of our party, the national chairman. He used to ask me to speak in safe districts, either safe Republican or safe Democratic districts, where I couldn't cause any problem. And I remember he sent me to Indiana one time. He said it was going to be a big event, so whatever Ray said, I did. And so I arrived in Indiana that afternoon, and at 5 o'clock, the advance ticket sale had already reached 10. I was in my first term in Congress, and people didn't know whether it was Dole or Doyle or didn't care. So they rushed me to the radio station thinking they might be able to get up to 50 and then bring in a few freebies and paper the house, and we'd have a great rally and maybe make enough to pay my expenses. And so as we were being interviewed at the radio station, we went through this long history that I was born, and not again, but born once. That I'd gone to school and gone off to war and all that. And as we left the radio station, the announcer was summarizing, and he said all these preliminary things. He went on to say that prior to World War II, Congressman Dole was a pre-medical student. He suffered a serious head injury in the war. And then he went into politics. So, I don't know how you got here, but I know how I got here. And I had my physical today to prove it. And I'm in good health. I'm ready for Carter. And I'm ready for Mondale. And I only suggest that pineapple juice is better for you than peanut butter. For one thing, it doesn't stick to the roof of your mouth. Now, many people wonder how I got on the ticket, and more people are asking that question every day. Every time I leave a town, people say, how did it happen? And I'll tell you how it happened very quickly, and as I've said so many times before, that last day, I had prepared a number of lists where my name was on top. We had a mimeograph machine, and we put little notes, outstanding, qualified, experience from the Midwest, a farm background. And we circulated those all over Kansas City. But we had a communications gap. We forgot to leave any at the president's hotel. And so that didn't seem to work, and we were pretty much resigned to the fact that it was going to be someone else. And on the morning of the 19th of August, the early morning news said it was down to four names. The first was Ann Armstrong, and of course, though the one selected had to be back in Kansas City by noon to meet with the president. And she was in Scotland, and I saw no way she could get back by noon, so I crossed her off the list. Another was Bill Ruckelshaus, who was a fine man, a fine Republican, a great leader from Indiana. He was out in Tacoma, Washington. And besides, his name is pretty long for a button, so I figured that that we could scratch him off. And that left Senator Baker and Senator Dole, and I said to my wife, Elizabeth, if they don't go in alphabetical order, I've got a chance. And shortly after that, the press started gathering in the hallway. And our room was next to the Conley suite. And I said, uh-oh, Big John's the one. The newscast was wrong. But during the height of all the excitement, you could hear the press and the cameras clinking and chatter, general enthusiasm among the press, because they knew it was about over. And we all had the same feeling, I'm not saying about the press. So I said to Elizabeth, I said, put your ear to the door and see what they're talking about out there. It's legal in Kansas City if you do it from the inside out. And she said she heard my name mentioned, so I started shaving and doing a lot of other things so that I might be prepared if the call came. And we had planned on leaving the room about that moment. We decided that, well, we could do whatever we had to do later. And the phone did ring. And because I was so near Governor Conley's suite, when the president said, this is President Ford, I said, I accept. Because I thought he might have had the wrong number. And then later I identified myself. So I said, Jerry, this is Bob. And, you know, we're on a first name droppers. But it's a great experience. I'm very proud to be on the ticket with an outstanding president of the United States, Gerald R. Ford. Someone said, why do you want to be vice president? I said, well, it's indoor work with no heavy lifting. saw Senator Humphrey today, I said, I've been asked by the press a lot, why do you want to be vice president? And I said, I always tell the press that, well, I've talked to Senator Humphrey and Vice President Rockefeller, and even though it has some downs and ups and downs, sometimes mostly downs, they both would accept it again. And he said, that's right. And it was a much better visit than the one last week when I saw Senator Humphrey. I said hello, and about an hour later, I said goodbye. And it was... it was a very stimulating conversation. And I guess the moral is you can learn a lot if you listen. Then after that visit with Senator Humphrey, I walked into the Senate chamber, and Senator McGovern was speaking, and he said, he was right at the climax of his speech, and he said in a very enthusiastic and spirited voice, he said, now, gentlemen, let me tax your memories. And Kennedy jumped up and said, why haven't we thought of that before? Well, apparently Mr. Carter heard the joke because he's now thought of it. He's going to raise the taxes if he's elected for over half the American families. And he says if you earn over $14,000 a year as a family, that's a working man and a working wife, you're rich. And you ought to pay more taxes. And that's what he said. And he's not going to wiggle out of it or wriggle out of it or get off the hook. We're going to remind him of it every day until November 2nd. He said in that same interview, and he's been granting interviews lately, I think you ought to have a moratorium on interviews. But he said in that interview he didn't think Americans wanted their taxes lowered. Is there anyone here who doesn't want their taxes lowered? If there is, we have a doctor standing by, and he'll be glad to look you over. Of course, Mr. Carter has good footwork. I think Woody Hayes probably sent him one of his books. But he didn't send him the plays. That's the difference. He only sent him the cover. And Carter read that book cover to cover. And he said, I didn't mean what it said, I said. And then Senator Mondale, you've heard of him. Not often, but now and then. He's a good senator. He's going to be there again next January to help out. But I think they talked about it. I think Mondale called Carter. And Carter gave him three different answers before he said hello. And they talked about the tax thing, and Carter must have said to Mondale, fuzz it up a little. Make it like our other positions, like the one on defense spending, like the one on bigger government. And so Senator Mondale is very obliging. So he said in Maine yesterday, well, Carter didn't mean the median income. He meant anybody over $50,000 ought to have their taxes increased. Well, Carter didn't say that. And Senator Mondale knows Carter didn't say that. And the American people are going to know Carter didn't say that. And as I said at the time, if a man's been running for the highest office in this land for well over 2 years, and doesn't know the median income of American families, the halfway mark, he shouldn't be running for the highest office in the land. Because Mr. Carter's putting all these things in his computer. And if he's elected, which will not happen, he might pull out the wrong card. And I hope that in the debate, he'll explain what he really means. Now, we're having three debates, and it's intentional. It's to give Mr. Carter the opportunity. To give all three positions on each issue. Now, if you've read the Democrat platform, and I don't suppose you have, but if you read it very carefully, and we have, it calls for 65, not 25, 55, but 65, either new spending programs, increased spending programs, or expanded spending programs. It calls for 22, not 10, but 22, either new agencies or expanded agencies or increased functions for agencies to administer those new programs and existing programs. Now, we didn't take all 65 because we have a busy schedule. But we took five of those programs and added up a conservative cost. And five of those programs would cost the American taxpayer in excess of $100 billion. Not million, but $100 billion. And I think probably Mr. Carter was telling you like it was, and he said he's going to have to increase taxes for everyone who makes over $14,000 a year if he intends to pay for these $100 billion in new programs. And I just say to you, yes, I know you're Republicans. I know you're concerned about the future of your country. I know you're concerned about the re-election of Bob Taft. But take a look at that platform or take a look at those programs. I understand Governor Carter may be 6 or 8 points ahead in Ohio. I think we can turn that around, don't you? I think, as President Ford said, we ought to be doing two things. We ought to reduce federal spending and reduce taxes. What's wrong with that? That's precisely the policy President Ford has pursued in the past 2 years. It's the policy the Ford Dole administration will pursue the next 4 years. Not increased spending, not increased taxes. When we started our campaign, our first stop was in Russell, Kansas. I happen to live there. And it's on the way to Colorado, and the president was headed there. And so we had a good visit there, and as I told Ray Bliss many times, we've always wanted to have the Republican National Convention in Russell, Kansas. We were going to have it there this year, but one motel burned down, the other one was booked solid, so we couldn't have it. But on the way to Russell, Kansas, the president said, maybe you better go up to Seattle. I think Governor Carter is going to address the American Legion. And so I went to Seattle. And when Governor Carter was there, he had the gall to stand before the American Legion and tell these men, young men, middle-aged men, older men, and their wives and families, He really tried to fool these people. He said, you know, I'm not for general amnesty. I'm for general pardon for draft evaders. Well, we decided to get out the dictionary because I hadn't been in school a while and he hasn't either. And we found out that amnesty means a general pardon. And so I was the speaker next day. And I said to the American Legion that under the Ford-Dole administration, there's going to be no blanket amnesty, no blanket pardon, or no blanket clemency for draft evaders or deserters. You know, there's still hundreds of Americans missing in Southeast Asia. There may be some alive. And I'd rather concern myself with those forgotten Americans than with those who forgot America in a time of need. And I'd like to see Governor Carter explain that in the debate. Where are his priorities? And what are his priorities? I'll tell you what his priority is: to get elected at any cost and any promise and any statement. And then I learned that he was going to Des Moines, Iowa, to the fair. And we were sort of headed in that direction, so we thought we would go to the fair. I like fairs, particularly fairs in Iowa and Ohio and Kansas. And he was going out to talk to a farm group, and they're very important to the Republican Party. And we have a good record in agriculture, but he was going to go out and tell these Iowa farmers, as he did. And he stood there, and he said, without emotion, there'll be no embargoes in the Carter administration. They're ended once and for all. And the farmers applauded. Some Republican farmers applauded. And he'd won the day. But I guess on the way to the car, he met a reporter. And the reporter said, did you really mean that? He said, well, no. There would be embargoes in some emergency cases. Now, he hadn't been on the ground too long, and he already had two positions on embargoes. But since that time, he's had some more. And again, I say to my farm friends in this audience, and there are some in this audience, he said in Reader's Digest, which comes out today, and I hope every farmer in Ohio reads this, whether you're a cattle feeder or a wheat producer, or whatever. He said, one reason for the cause of inflation were excessive grain sales to Russia. Now, this is a man who says, we're not going to have any embargoes. I just say you ought to stop granting those interviews. Or you ought to start telling the truth, one or the other. And I want to say this to those who represent rural districts and come from rural areas, that I've been on the House Agriculture Committee for 8 years, and I'm the ranking Republican on the Senate Agriculture Committee, and President Ford has told me privately that come January, I'm going to have a very special role to play in American agriculture. We're going to work for the American farmer. We think it's right for the American farmer to prosper. We don't want 8 more years of Orville Freeman-type programs. Just let me say one or two other things, and Bob Taft has said it with more eloquence than I can. And that's on defense. There isn't a person in this hall or theater, behind me or in front of me, who doesn't want to save tax money, who doesn't think, and very properly so, that there's a lot of money being wasted in Washington, and it ought to be stopped. And I share that view. I'm on the budget committee. I'm on the finance committee. And I think my voting record fairly well reflects my conservative views and my opposition to needless spending programs. But as Bob Taft has said, there's one area we have to look at very carefully. Now again, Governor Carter has said, I'm going to cut the defense budget $5 to $7 billion. That's only half as much as Metzenbaum wants to cut it. But the real result's going to be the same. I think a great deal about peace. I feel very strongly, as everyone in this audience does, about peace. And I'm not talking just about here, I'm talking about peace in the world. I'm not talking about conflicts or involvement by this country. I'm talking about being number one in the world for the sake of peace. Now, I don't want to be number two. And I suggest Mr. Carter ought to tell us if he wants to be number two, or if not, where he's going to take out $5 to $7 billion. Because just last week, Secretary Rumsfeld says to keep up real growth, we're going to have to add some $18 to $20 billion in defense. And if we have to make a sacrifice here or there to preserve our liberty and freedom and be a leader in the free world, that's the way it's got to be. And again, if Mr. Carter had just been consistent, I just plead with him to be consistent. Please, Mr. Carter, take one position, whatever it is, and stick with it. Even if you're right. The odds aren't that way, but by accident, maybe. But he said in June 72, military spending cuts would weaken national security and endanger America's strong defense system. And in May 75, he said, the federal budget should be cut, especially the defense budget. Approximately $15 billion could be cut from the defense budget and not weaken this nation's military capability. Now he's saying $5 to $7 billion. And I say, Mr. Carter, you're going to have a chance to look at millions of people out there and talk and communicate with millions of Americans. You're going to have a chance to tell them where you stand and just tell them like it is. One time, tell them like it is. If that isn't bad enough, he says he supports the Humphrey Hawkins bill. I don't know of any state that has a better jobs program or any governor that's tried harder than Governor Rhodes for jobs in his state, and he succeeded. And he's done it without the long hand of the federal government being the employer of last resort at a cost of $20 to $40 billion. And that's the price tag on the Humphrey Hawkins bill. Even Humphrey doesn't mention it anymore. And we elected 75 liberal Democrat congressmen in 74. And they're concerned about their employment. And they had a meeting about a month ago and they voted 65 to 10 not to bring up the Humphrey Hawkins bill this year. They don't want to be unemployed next year. But in this same Associated Press interview, let me tell you what Mr. Carter said in the brief span of about 2 minutes about the Humphrey Hawkins bill. He said, first, a question. Are you urging your fellow Democrats in Congress to support the bill and pass it? Answer, yes. Why yes? Second question. The word around town is that a number of Democrats in the House have told leadership they would just as soon adjourn without having to go on record on this one before the election. Answer, I am not trying to push passage of the bill. Now, you know, I don't know what to believe. Is he or isn't he? Is he or isn't he? He says yes, and then he says no. I just say, ladies and gentlemen, conclusion. that I've known President Ford for 16 years. Served in the House with him for 8 years. He's been the vice president. He's been the president. He graduated with honors from Michigan. In the upper third of his class at Yale Law School. He has the ability. He has the competence. He's demonstrated leadership. He's cut the rate of inflation in half. 88 million Americans are working. We're making progress in America. And we're doing it, as someone said earlier, at a time when we have peace in the world. And I frankly get a little tired of Mr. Carter boasting about their last unemployment figures. You know, when they were taken at a time when 500,000 Americans were in South Vietnam. That's how they reduced employment, and that's not the answer. I've said for a long time, Republicans ought to say things over and over.